Welcome to the Family Story Podcast, where we talk about family relationships, important family events, and most of all, family stories that can be passed on for generations to come. I'm your host, Rick Jensen, and I'm glad you've joined us today. So sit back, listen, learn, and love as we talk about your family in this episode of the Family Story Podcast.
Welcome to the Family Story Podcast. This is interview segment number 4 with Ernie Jensen. And I felt like there needed to be some summary work done regarding family and work and marriage and just some principles that we can learn from you, Grandpa. So this episode is focused on principles and what we can learn from you and your life. So let's start with one of your hobbies, the Ernie Jensen Orchestra. I would like to hear any great memories you have of playing with the orchestra. Can you go into detail on that?
While we was living there in the fire station, why our oldest daughter, Betty, wanted to get married to Clyde Dover, so I said, well, we'll give you a dance. And nobody was having dances in for weddings, you know. And she said, well, who'll play for it? I said, we'll get the old gang together. So I got Frank and Zesta and me and Vivian and Dover and Claire Gould, somebody else, I forget who it was. But anyway, we had quite an orchestra, and we played for that dance. And right now, people want us to come play for their kids' dances. So we did a few of them. That's when I had the ranch out to Idaho, and I'd bought the old ranch back and bought it back in 36. And so we said, well, why don't we go out to Mary's, Iverson's, to NAF there and play for one night and then go over to the ranch and stay all night and come home the next day. And they all decided they wouldn't do that. So we went out. She noised it around that we was coming out. No, she had the hall right full. So she said, I want you to come back for Christmas and New Year's Eve. So I said, all right. So we went back out, and we got as much New Year's Eve tips as we got wages when he was playing out there that night. Oh, that was a good one.
Sounds like your orchestra was pretty popular. What was it like playing for dances on New Year's Eve?
Everybody would get it drinking a little bit, and first thing you know, somebody was out fighting. And boy, the one night there, New Year's Eve, she says, I don't know what we're going to do. She says, they always start to fighting right after New Year's Eve. And I said, let me handle it. So when old Lang Syne, Jerry was just a little fella then, about 14 years old, and he was just singing. This one guy came up to me and said, Jerry, if you'll sing 5'2", I'll give you $5. He came over to meet Dad, and he says, can we sing 5'2"? And I said, yeah, we got it up there all ready to go. He said, gee, if he'd have kept his mouth shut, I'd have sang it for nothing, wouldn't I? And I said, you sure would. I said, he's got plenty of money. Let him pay you. He's a sheep man. I said, now you take my watch and watch it. And the minute it comes New Year's Eve, you holler and we'll stop. And so he stopped us right in the middle of the tune. And we started right off all on old anxiety. And boy, they just hollered and squealed. And then we stopped for just a minute. And everybody just hollered and squealed. And I said, everybody kiss everybody now. And boy, you never seen such a kissing mess in your life. And I let them take about, oh, not over a half a minute, and then I started right off on 5'2", and we give them about 5 dances. Just went from one to the other just as fast as we could, and we never stopped in between, just kept going from one to the other. And when they got done, they was all so tired, they didn't think nothing about fighting. And Mary came up to me and said, when you said everybody kiss everybody, I thought, here goes the whole works, she said. But it didn't, and went just as smooth as it could be.
Oh, Grandpa, that is so funny. And you kept the peace on New Year's. Way to go. What a great story. Thanks for sharing that. Now, with your orchestra, you were able to travel around a lot and do some playing in different venues. Can you give me a brief synopsis of some of those places that you played at?
We went out there for quite a bit playing for dances Saturday nights. And finally, then we got playing down here and started playing for the over at the Berthana. And we played there for 9.5 years. Then we went back up to NAF, or to Hiram, played there for about 5 years. Came back down and played about almost a year back to Berthana again, but it just wasn't the same anymore because our old dancers had got too old to go to dances, and job corps had moved in there, and they'd keep coming up there, and it scared the older people, and they didn't dare to come down, so they quit coming to those dances. So we finally had to give it up. And then we went back up to Hiram, and we played up there for a dance club for a while. Had lots of fun through that.
That sounds like a great run for an orchestra. Way to go. Very good. Well done. Grandpa, we haven't talked a lot about your house and all of these different places you lived before I was not familiar with, but the house that I remember was located right there on Far West Drive. I would like to hear more about the energy and the finances of what it took in order to build that house while you were there. Can you please expound on that for me?
When we moved back out here, we moved into the old Davis home there for about 3 years, and I decided to build a home, and I come up here on this corner where we are now and rode my horse up here, and I could see a lot of possibilities here and things that I could do. And so I went over and asked Chet and Lyle about it, and they said, no, that's for Owen when he comes back off his mission. He wants. In the meantime, they was having a little trouble keeping him on a mission, I guess. It's pretty expensive from then. So they wrote and asked him, what about this corner? And he says, sell it, I don't want it. So that's too close to the railroad for me. And the old railroad, well, he'd quit running it then, but it was still there and part of it. So they called me up and wanted me to come over and said, I wanted to see you. So I just put my checkbook in my pocket and went over. And I walked in and I said, how you getting along? He says, fine, we'll decide to sell you that corner. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what I want, then you can tell me what you can do. I want all the ditches in my place so I can clean them all out, get rid of all those plum trees and stuff, and make it look like something. They said, well, that's what we'd like you to take over. I said, well, how much? He says, $1,200. And I just wrote him out a check right now for $1,200.
Let me stop you there for a minute, because what you just did is a very important financial principle. And it's one that our generation today has difficulty living. You were financially prepared to go and get what you wanted so that you could write a check out right then. I think that's such a great lesson to teach to your posterity. You didn't go into debt. You just went ahead and purchased what you wanted. What a great lesson to teach to your posterity. I know that you were happy with the purchase. What did others say about it?
Ren Taylor and Jim Davis said, you're crazy giving them that much for that old slough up there. And I said, that won't be a slough very long. I said, I'll soon fix that. So it wasn't too long till Jerry and I was playing for a dance out to NAF when I guess it was Christmas night. Yeah, it was Christmas night. And him and I got one of these big chainsaws, and there was about 100 or 150 old trees out there. Of course, there's only a few of them that's pretty good size, and this old chainsaw was about 4.5, 5 feet long. They had to get a hold of both sides of it. And we went out there, and we sawed all those trees down before we went to play for that dance. And we came in about 1 o'clock and had dinner, had a little rest, and we went and played for the dance that night at NAF. And then the next Saturday, we sawed all those trees up, so we could drag them over in the ditch there and burn them. And I put about 150 old tires underneath them and then pulled them over there, and did we ever have a fire. Then I got a cat over here from Slaterville in Cobape, and he came over and leveled that, filled that slough in for me, and we leveled it all up. Finally, he said, I've got to go. You take the cat and finish up what you want. Do it the way you want it. So he left, and I finished the job up the way we wanted it, and we plowed it up, and we got a lot of fertilizer from Harold Taylor up there. He had a Crowley one that cleaned out, so we cleaned it out, and we had got that back into hay, and boy, it's produced hay ever since.
So here's another great principle that you're teaching. It takes work in order to build something. You just can't get it overnight. It's going to take work, and it's going to take time. And I love the fact how you took your family and you involved them in the work and the work process to help teach them how to work as well. Very well done, Grandpa.
We finished the house and got the roof on it and moved up here just before I got the Christmas trees out to sell that fall, while we moved up here in the basement. And then after I sold the Christmas trees, I had a little money left over then to go ahead and start finished it. So we finished. We had the bathroom finished in the kitchen and down here. And so then we had a cupboard that Mother had given us, and we kept that, and we put that up in the kitchen. And we lived in the kitchen then, put a sink in there. And we lived there we'd go up there and eat, and then we'd come down here and sleep. So then we started finishing up. We finished up one bedroom and give that so Zelda could have a bedroom. And then the boys, we had one downstairs here, and one of the boys had the other one, and They slept together in there for a while. Then we finally got another bedroom finished upstairs, and we moved into that and let Jerry have a room and Rex have a room down here. So we all had a bedroom that way. And then we started working on our front room. And we bought a new overstuff set on sale to go to in it, but they left it over to Boyle's, and they finally said, you'll have to come get it now in our inventory. We got to get it out of here. So we took it out and brought it out here and put a canvas over it or something. I don't forget what, covered it up so it wouldn't get dirty. We went on and finished up our living room, and then we had a place for the piano and stuff, and we went over to UNI and bought a carpet to put down there, I remember. And boy, did we think we were something then. Well, carpet like that, this new overstuff set, we was really something.
It's fun to hear you talk about these things, because carpet's something that is, I think, normal in every American household today. Please, continue.
But then, I was going to have a carpenter come and build us a kitchen cabinet out there. And he kept putting us off for about a year. So I was talking to Ted Parker over there one day. He said, why don't you build it yourself? And so I talked it over with him, and he was quite a carpenter, and he showed me how, and he thought I could do it. So I borrowed a saw from Otto Dover, and I started in on that kitchen cabinet. That's the one I've got there now. So I built I called Anderson up, and I told him, I said, I got a carpenter to build that cabinet, so you won't have to bother about it. And he said, oh, fine. He said, I'm still so crowded, I can't get to do anything. He said, who'd you get? And I said, Ernie Jensen. Good, he said, you can do it. So I built this cabinet. So then we decided that we didn't have a ceiling in the basement room, so we decided to put this plasterboard in all over and make ceilings. And we finished up this big living room now and put panel board on it. My wife says, we've got to paint that now again. It needs painting. I said, I'm not going to paint anymore. I said, I've painted all I'm going to.
Okay, let me just stop here for a minute, because there's a couple things I just want to comment on. First of all, I'm just so impressed that you're just a person who just goes out and does something. You know, so many times we have to wait for the specialist to go and do things, but you're somebody who, when you need something done, you just go learn how to do it. What a great principle to teach your posterity. If we need something done, we just go out and do it. We try to learn how to do it and do our best at doing it. And you can learn a skill in that process. Great. The second thing I want to comment on is, I think every husband in here who's listening to this has heard their wives say something like that before, and the husband may be like, okay, I'm finished with this job. It just makes me smile and laugh, because this is a part of your story that becomes very real. I can hear the emotion in your voice. You can remember you did not want to paint anymore, and that emotion in your voice shares with me, your posterity, and probably all of our audience as well. There is a little banter in relationships, and it's okay to be able to discuss things through and talk things through and figure things out. And, you know, looking at it as a grandchild, I didn't see that. I probably didn't even recognize it. But to hear it, and now having my own experience of marriage, and probably many of your other posterity having their experience of marriage, this is something they can relate to. So thank you for sharing that and being real with us. So now I'm interested. How did you appease your wife, who said you were going to paint and you weren't going to paint? What did you do?
So I went out and got in the pickup. She says, where are you going? And I says, down to Plain City. She says, well, pick up some paint while you're down there. And I said, okay. When I come back, I had a whole trailer load of panel wood. What are you going to do with that? And I said, I'm going to panel that basement down there. Oh, you can't do that. And I said, yes, I can. So I started out and I got it all paneled. It looks so nice. And I even went into the furnace room and paneled that. And then we got a man out here, and he sprayed the ceilings first. And that's what we got now. We put in a nice big light down here so it'd be plenty light so we could see plenty. And that's what we use now for our TV room and our stereo room and rumpus room. And we have our parties every Christmas Eve here. And there's plenty of room. We got a big table. And there's plenty of room now for us down here. We don't have to dirty the upstairs at all, so it don't make it too bad for her to clean up.
And I remember very many times of being down in that room enjoying the parties that were there, and also just enjoying you and Grandma and watching TV with you. particularly Lawrence Welk and Little House on the Prairie. And one of the best parts about that night was not just the source of entertainment, because, you know, nobody can beat Lawrence Welk, but also the popcorn. Grandpa's popcorn was the very best.
I'm a great popcorn eater, and I always have to have popcorn every night. And I guess I'm pretty sloppy with it. I get it spilled all over. Sometimes I'll get up and sweep it up with the vacuum, and then again I won't. And she gets a little provoked over that, but we get along all right, and we finally make it up, and I get up and do the vacuum for her once in a while.
Oh, Grandpa, you're a good man. Let's talk a little bit about your hobbies, because another thing that I remember is you would employ the neighborhood by having them work in the greenhouse. In fact, as a little kid, I remember going over to the greenhouse and putting cups into boxes and earning 5 cents for every box that I filled. I know the teenagers made more than I did, but there's not a lot of information in your other podcasts that talk about the greenhouse. Would you mind going into detail on that and explain how it got started?
Jerry got the itch and he wanted to raise some flowers, so we made him a hotbed out here right over the septic tank. And we planted some flowers in there, some seeds and stuff, and they done pretty good there. But then we decided we'd build a little greenhouse, so I had about enough blocks to do it. And Jerry had about $75 he'd saved out of his singing job he had over to Cop there. And so we built that greenhouse. It's 14 by 20. But we found out that it was too small. It took too much to heat it for what little you could get out of it. So I said, we've either got to get larger or get out of the business. So then we made hotbeds all over outside and just used that to do it. But that, we didn't have enough room inside to get them warm enough and get them growing fast enough. So we made another longer one, added 40 feet onto it. And that was a good one. And that's the way we do now. We grow them in the first one. Then we move them, plant them and move them out into this long one, leave them there for about 2 weeks, and then they go outside into the cold frame. And then we just kept building up. I got a hold of some glass over to the Grittingtons there, and they had that windstorm, and they'd bring all these glasses in, and they was checked with the sand, and they give them all to me. And I learned how to cut glass in, so we built them other three hot houses, and they're plate glass now. So, but the frost even breaks them, too. They don't hold up too long. They last so long, and then, but we finally kept on working on the greenhouse and playing for dances, and we were just having the time of our life.
And there we have another great principle. Work brings joy, and even when you can find hobbies and start to build upon your hobbies, that brings joy. Tell me about your other kids, my aunts and uncles. What they clearly noticed that you were willing to help them grow and work in their hobby. How did they present their idea to you?
Rex come along and he said, Dad, I want to be horses. I got to have a horse. So we had to get horses with him. And then he had to get welders. So we had to get a welder and things for him. Finally, Rex got him a job welding. And I said, that's too hard on you. I said, get something else. But I made him a big fan. And we put over there right in front of him. And then it'd blow them fumes away from him so he didn't have to stand and breathe them all the time.
And that hobby later actually became his career. So there's something I'm learning here, Grandpa. And remember, I mentioned to you about your own parents being so involved and so engaged in your family. And I'm seeing that same characteristic from you. You are willing to share and teach and help your family grow. What a wonderful principle for your posterity to learn, for their future families, that is a responsibility of a father. It sounds like you had this skill down way before the proclamation of the family was presented, that a father's responsibility is to provide, preside, and protect. And you did all three of those very well. Could you continue on by giving an example of how you were able to do that, provide, preside, protect, even as a dad to grown-up children? Because working with your grown-up children is a lot different than raising little children. How did you provide, preside, and protect at that season in your life when your kids were growing up?
Jerry was getting, so we had to get him a house. So we bought this house that he has now. It used to be the old John Child's house. And we moved it out there, set it up. And he's made quite a house out of it now. He's got plenty of room. He's got two bedrooms downstairs and three upstairs, so they've got room enough now to raise their family. It turned out that Jerry don't do too much around the greenhouse now. He's got 40 other jobs to do. He's got cakes and playing for dances and Weight Watchers and all these other things, so poor old Dad got the brunt of it. But I can keep it on for a while, and when I get too old to do it, well, I can always quit.
And later on, that's exactly what you did. And that's okay, because you were able to help your children go through and grow through a process. Now let's talk about something a little bit more personal. Let's talk about the relationship that you had with your wife. Tell me about that.
I've got to pay tribute to my wife, Viva. We was married on the 10th of November, 1921. When we got moved into our little house there, we lived there for maybe 2 or 3 years, 4 years maybe, and then we built on to it. But I'll remember when we first got there, we didn't have blinds for our house, so we saved up our dance money and stuff that we made plain for dances, and we wanted some of these scalloped blinds. Finally, we went over and had Boyles make us some. Now, I remember the night we got them about 6 o'clock at night. He got through it, and we brought them out, and we was till 12 o'clock that night putting them up. Boy, did we think we were somebody to have scalloped blinds. Nobody around there had them like that, and we was really in pink. We really had something then.
Sounds to me like you made a great team.
She was a real helpmate. She was really a good housekeeper, too. I never in my whole life ever brought anybody into the house that I was ashamed of it, because it was so nice and clean all the time. I've heard several say, well, your wife's a real good housekeeper. And I said, she sure is. When we moved over to the fire station, she really had to take care of the kids then, because I was there with them in the daytime and night. I was there with them all the time, but when they had to go to church or out to do anything. And Florine was taking violin lessons then, and she used to take her around to these wards to play violin solos for them. Later on, Jerry came up and he was singing, so she had to take him around singing. And she just took the blood of everything from there on.
And speaking of that, this was a difficult time to live back then. Like, you know, the ladies couldn't just throw a dinner in the microwave and have it done in 10 minutes. If they needed to go somewhere, they couldn't just hop out in the car. They would put the team of horses together and ride out. That's a lot different than what our women face today in society. Do you have any examples that you could share with Grandma doing that type of work?
I'll never forget one time after we'd bought the ranch, and this old fellow that was there and had it before bought it off and says, well, you can't use them horses anymore. And we had about 900 or 1,000 bushel of grain to get in, so we took Mother's team. I loaded them in this trailer, and she got three boys to go with her, and she took the family. And they went up, took the team, went up, and done the hauling the grain in and stacking it. And then she brought them back. And when she came back, they'd got a lot of pine nuts. They had about 7 or 8 sacks of pine nuts, and there wasn't room to put them anyplace. So Dave, my brother, he was running the ranch for me then, and he tied them on the side, and he said, if you see a claim down there, stake it out for me, too, he says, someplace. So she come driving in that night with these horses and trailer and stuff, and man, looked like she was taking off through the country someplace. But she was good. She took care of the kids first while we steady working like that. And when I got a day off, we'd go to the ranch and stay overnight sometime. And it was sure enjoyable. And she said, oh, I wish we could move up here. She said, have a house of our own again. But it worked out. We was all ready to quit and go up there one time. And I took a vacation. I got my 2 weeks vacation. I thought, well, I'll tell them now when I go back. And when I got back, they'd raised my wages $50 a month. And so we decided we better stay with it. And I'm kind of glad I did now, because kids grew up and they had their habits down here, and they were going to school here, and they didn't want to move back out there. So it was really nice that we stayed. I worked out a good pension out of it. So now we're really comfortable and got everything we want here. And only one thing is, the place is getting kind of big to take care of alone. So, but I guess I'll work out some way. I don't have anything else to do, so I've got to have something to keep me busy.
I don't think you've ever had a problem with not being able to stay busy your entire life. You seem to take advantage of every opportunity that's available to you. And that brings the question about finances, because some of those opportunities were actually paying jobs. Can you tell me a little bit how you and Grandma would work your financial situation in your marriage? Because finances, that's a big part of a marriage relationship. Go into detail on that for me.
After I got the steady job working for the county, we didn't have too much money troubles anyway. Together we worked it out. We used to put our check in the bank, and then I'd write out checks. She'd get them all ready for me, and I'd sign them. So one day she says, "Why can't we split this money up, and I'll keep the house on certain?" She says, "You give me one check, and I'll take you take the other one." And I said, "Okay, it's all right with me." So she used to take one check, I'd take the other one. And we started to save in that way. And when we moved over to the fire station, where we didn't have to have too much to utilities to pay for, she used to take her check for the house, to run the house on and the kid. And then I'd put my check, I'd buy United States savings bonds with it. And she was only making $180 a month then. And so we'd split it up, and I'd buy bond every month with mine. Sometimes I'd save up and get two of them.
That's an interesting investment vehicle you choose to put your money in. Probably particular for the time period, I would say. You've also shown by example, and even in this podcast, you've explained how you've invested time in your family in helping them out. Tell me about them, the order of your children, and what it's like to make time for your children when you're so busy trying to provide for them at the same time.
Betty was born, then Florine, then Zelda, then Jerry, and then we moved over to the fire station where Rex was born.
Now, we mentioned this previously, that you tried to involve your children in your life as much as you could, including work. Do you have an example of where you did that with your kids?
I was digging ditches up in the valley and around, and President David O. McKay, that's when he was apostle, came over and he said, "Brother Jensen, could you dig a ditch down from there for me?" And I said, "If the commissioners will let me, I can." So he went and seen him. They said, "Sure, go ahead." He said, "I want to run this water back this way." And I says to him, I says, "Well, you might be a good church member, but you can't run water uphill." So he said, "Well, you dig it the way you think it ought to be done." So I dug that ditch, and the next morning I was through, and he came up there and he said, "I decided to run that water back that way." And I says to him, "You better go look at the ditch first." And it was 5 foot deep up at the upper end and about a foot deep down there, and it had a good fall. He says, "I never would have thought that." So he said, "Well, what about this other? Can you drain that?" And I says, "Yes, if you can get those ties you got piled up down there for me to run on, I'll go right down through that slough." So him and his son came up and got those ties and put them in for me. And then I'd pull them up and bring them around halfway with the drag line so they could get them. Him and his son was wallowing in that mud clear up to their waists all day long until I got done that afternoon at 4 o'clock and finished the job. He stayed right there with me and moved those ties. And then he shook hands with me and says, "Boy, you sure done a good job there. That's really something."
Well, that's a great story about working for and meeting a prophet of God. That's pretty interesting. I'm just a little bit confused. What does that have to do with your family?
A few years later, and then I was running a drag line up there once, and he used to have a black team, and he really used to think a lot of them. He'd come up once or twice a week and drive them, hitch them up and drive them. So one day he came over there and he was loading gravel out of his gravel pit and said, "Brother Jensen, would you give me a couple of dumps of that gravel on here?" And I said, "You bet." So he'd haul it over and dump it. He had a little place over there. He's fixing a little roadway into it. And two or three times he'd done that. And so one day I said, "Do you care if I bring my wife and family up here and let him run around and play here while I'm working?" And he says, "Sure, you bring him right up here."
Okay, now I see where you're going with this. Thank you for setting up the context of the story. The original question was, again, how did you involve your kids in your work life where you had such a busy schedule? And now I'm looking forward to this answer.
So I took the wife, and I said, when I had three children, I took them up, and
And she had dinner fixed, and I went over and had dinner with her. And the kids, there used to be a little creek middle fork there, and there's just a little water in it in the summertime, and they'd wade around and that. And, oh, they had the time of their lives. And after about 2 o'clock, why, they all had to have their nap, so they went to sleep. She had the car and things over there, so they got in the car and went to sleep. And then I came over about 4 o'clock when I quit working, and we came on home. But President McKay went over, it wasn't President then, he was Apostle. He went over and shook hands with her and talked to the kids, and it was quite a thrill to have Apostle, and later on to be the president of the church. Of course, I always knew that, and I've told a lot of people that he'd be one of our presidents of our church, so it worked out that way.
Let's go into a little bit more detail about the church, because it seems like as a younger child, growing up in your family, you weren't particularly actively engaged in the church, but it seems like after you were married, you became more actively engaged in the church and being involved in the church and what the church teaches. In a previous podcast, you mentioned that you were in the bishopric. Can you tell me about your experience about becoming more actively involved in the gospel of Jesus Christ and in his church on the earth?
Just before Betty was born, Moroni Chug got a hold of me and got me to come to church, and I finally was ordained a priest. And that's when we was building this new, the church now, what we standing here, and I was working on the church at the time, making $4 a day, and Bibi had to go to the hospital. She was there for 12 days, I believe. But anyway, it cost us $48. I was making $4 a day, and it cost $4 a day at the hospital. Now it would cost you about $400 a day.
Probably a lot more than that now.
But anyway, I was ordained a priest, and I used to bless the sacrament, and we was going on a vacation for a week once, and it was my turn to bless the sacrament for a month. That's when he's going to have our chapel dedicated there. And so something came up, we didn't go, and I told Bishop, I says, I won't be here, so you'll have to get somebody else. He says, okay, I'll get somebody. So we didn't go, and I went that next morning to the priesthood meeting, and I said, did you get anybody to minister the sacrament? And he said, no. Because I knew you'd be here. So I administered the sacrament that morning for Sunday school, and then that afternoon, I believe that's when we had our meetings in the afternoon. And anyway, President Grant came up and dedicated the building. I had the chance to bless the sacrament for the president of the church, and I thought that was something. I shook hands with him.
There's a lot of people who go through this life without meeting a prophet of God, and you actually met two and shook hands with them. That's pretty cool. It sounds like that experience had a pretty big impact on you. How did you continue to serve within the church throughout the rest of your life?
I was ordained a priest by Moroni Chug, 11th of January, 1925. An elder by President John V. Bluth, 16th of February, 1926. And then I was ordained a high priest by Arson F. Whitney, June the 3rd, 1928. That's when I was in the bishopric. After we was ordained an elder, we went through the temple then and was sealed for time and eternity. It just seemed like that we wasn't supposed to have children till after we'd been through the temple. So Brother Chug got us through the temple, and then we started to have our family. Then Betty was born shortly after, and we continued on. And when I was ordained the high priest, that's when I went into bishopric, and Arson Whitney says, you're one of the youngest high priests that we know of. I was 27 years old then. I worked in the bishopric with Renzo Taylor as bishop, James Davis as first counselor, and I was second counselor, and was in the bishopric for 8.5 years. Then I moved over to the fire station, and of course then I was released from the bishopric. So when we moved back out here, well, I was put in one of the high priest counselors and served under
James Davis for a couple of years. Then he was released and made high priest group leader. And then for a couple of years, I didn't serve there. Then I went back in, and I've been in there for 6 or 8 years now. Served as with Lionel Brady and Larson, Dennis Larson.
Now, temple work is something that you also chose to invest your time in. Go into detail on that. What have you been doing with your temple work?
We've got our genealogy clear back to 1680 on some of our ancestors, but we've got about 1,000 names now on the two families, that is my dad and mother's and their grandparents, and we go back to that far, and it's a thrill to see all those names that the work is done for and up to date. We've got one more now we've got to do in January. It's due now. We could go over and have her name sent in. She died here about a year ago, and we'll have her baptized. We'll do the work for her, and then that's about as far as we can go. We've had people working for us, and they just say that's about as far as we can find anything for you. Back in Denmark, they only went as far as 1646, so we haven't got too far to go there. We can't make anything else out of that, so we have to give that up again. But we're going to continue to work in the temple for some of the others that that hadn't had their work done. We had help getting ours done, so now we're going to enjoy it and help somebody else get theirs done.
That's a great example on how you can serve in the church and serve your Heavenly Father and continue to serve your fellow men. Thank you, Grandpa, for sharing that. Do you have anything else you'd like to add about your life and maybe in the process teach us some principles about your life?
This is some of the highlights on my life's history. There's lots that I've missed, I guess. Someday if I think about something I think I ought to have on there, I might add it onto this list and then it can be recorded.
Truly a prophetic statement right there.
So that's as far as I can go now for a while, so I'm going to say amen to this as far as I've gone.
Let's talk about the meaning of that word that you just used to end our interview on. The basic meaning of the word amen is a Semitic root from which it is derived is firm, fixed, or sure. And the related Hebrew verb also means to be reliable and to be trusted. The Greek Old Testament usually translates amen as so be it. In the English Bible, it has frequently been rendered as verily or truly. That definition is taken from the Encyclopedia Britannica. Grandpa, your story is sure, it is fixed, it is reliable, and you are a person to be trusted. That's something that I've learned while doing this podcast. Thank you very much for your example. Thank you very much for passing on those principles to your family. We have all grown from you. I sure appreciate the fact that you took the time to record your life so all of us could learn from it. Amen is a sacred word, and I think it's fitting to end your story with that word. And I add my own amen in agreement to a life that was so well lived. Thank you for joining us on the Family Story Podcast. Thank you for joining us today on the Family Story Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Family Story Podcast is a production of Harmony Audio Recordings. This podcast is strictly prohibited for use without permission. For more information about Family Story Podcast or to create your own Family Story Podcast, contact us at familystorypodcast.com. We hope you join us again soon and encourage you to go create a family memory today.